This is happening live. This is happening in the moment. You've got one take to do this, and that's it.
With Chris Van Vliet.
I think the biggest thing that this comes down to is trust. And here comes the curveball about a year in. And then one day my boss came in and said, everyone stop what you're doing and go home because we don't have a show. And he told me this great story about like how sometimes the best things in life are the things that don't happen. How like sometimes the best things in life are when life throws you a curveball and you go with it. You know, you thought your life was supposed to head this way, and instead it starts to go off in this other path, but it's leading you to a better destination.
You did something you're passionate about, and that is wrestling.
I went from watching no wrestling to watching everything. I've interviewed The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, John Cena, The Undertaker, Hulk Hogan.
The cream here rises.
Yeah, brother. Ooh, we got to do rapid fire rounds.
Let's go.
Rapid fire. In your opinion, biggest fight in history?
Rock Hogan, WrestleMania 18. I was there in Toronto.
Your favorite rivalry of all time?
There are so many.
Chris Van Vliet is going to fight Logan Paul.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset. Learn and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us. Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here, numero dos, the second time, part two, with Chris Van Vliet. What's up, brother?
Ben, great to see you. Thank you so much for having me back on.
Dude, as far as I'm concerned, you could just run the show. I don't know if you want to co-host.
Your name's in the title. I mean, you're the guy. Come on.
LST number 36, guys. Episode 36 of Learn, Speak, Teach. Chris Van Vliet was on. That is in the show notes. We got really deep into your backstory. But one thing we didn't touch on, you know, before we touch on that, what the heck's behind you? I see a YouTube logo. And is that an Emmy?
That's one Emmy there. I don't know. I'm torn on whether these should actually be in the background or not, but I knew we'd be talking a little bit about content creation. So I have two YouTube channels. Super fortunate, super grateful that there's been a bunch of support on those. So the main, this is the main Chris Van Vliet channel. I started in 2011 and it took 7.5 years and I got the silver play button. And then a few years later, I started the CVV Clips channel, which is just the best clips and best moments from those interviews. That one hit 100,000 significantly quicker. Wow. So, you know, super proud of all the work that the whole team has put in for both of those channels.
And that's one of four Emmys.
Yeah, my buddy recently interviewed Denzel Washington, and he said something that was so funny because Denzel's won two Oscars, right? And he goes, "Oh, Mr. Washington, may I ask you, where did you keep your Oscar?" And he goes, This is the funniest answer. I say it all the time. I keep my Oscar next to the other one. And I was like, oh, wow. Only Denzel could get away with that.
Love it. So, shoot, out of all those awards, which one are you most proud of?
That's such a great question, because it's like choosing your favorite child if you have multiple children. I think for me, winning the first Emmy Award just meant so much to me. Because at that point in my career, I had spent 5 years in Canada, really kind of climbing up the ranks, really paying my dues, really getting as much work in as I possibly could. I ended up getting a job in Cleveland. I was an entertainment reporter for the CBS affiliate, WOIO, in Cleveland. And I mean, that job was unbelievable. My first week there, I was covering the Oscars. And I submitted for the Emmys, not really knowing much about them. And I got nominated the first year that I was living in Cleveland. I just couldn't believe it. Like, here I am, this Canadian kid who's now working in the US on an O-1 visa, and I'm nominated for an Emmy. This is crazy.
It's amazing.
I didn't win the first year, but it put this like real hunger in me of like, oh, if I get nominated again, I do not want to lose. And I put so much work that next year into telling this story that I'm still so proud of over 10 years later. It was about a professional wrestler named Gregory Iron, who's from Cleveland and wrestles despite being born with cerebral palsy. And it's an incredibly inspiring story. And I was able to spend a ton of time with him and with his family telling this story. And then when that got nominated, I was just so excited and so proud of the work that we did. And then for that to be the story that I won my first Emmy for, that one meant a lot. And I ended up winning 2 Emmys that night. Wow. And I think why that meant so much to me was, you know, I was on a visa. I was living in the US. And when you're on a visa, you can only work for the company who has sponsored your visa. So I was getting some other like really small opportunities here and there, like, hey, do you want to appear on this radio show? Or do you want to write an article for this magazine? Or could you do some voiceover work? And the answer to all of those had to be no, because I couldn't do it with my visa. And I was speaking to an immigration attorney and I said, what would it take for me to get a green card? And he goes, well, like, what awards have you won? Like, that's going to be a really important part of this. I said, well, I was nominated for an Emmy. He goes, yeah, nomination. That's okay. But if you win one,
it's a pretty big deal. Still,
because if you win one, you know, they'll have a real good shot. And I remember when I won that one, I was like, oh my gosh, I think I'm going to get a green card now.
And you got the green card?
I got a green card. I just renewed it, actually. You can renew it you have to renew it every 10 years. So I just renewed it. And that was also another really cool moment for me to go, man, like, I'm here to stay.
And it's great because you were covering, you know, someone who did something you're passionate about, and that is wrestling as a whole. I'm going to go down memory lane. I remember, you know, WWF. I used to go into Blockbuster, and there is a little section with, you know, some of the best matches on a VHS. And I'd go in with my dad, pick out my VHS, pop it in, binge it all in one sitting, go back for another one. And transparently, I don't think I've sat down and watched, you know, a few hours of wrestling in 10 to 20 years. That part of me's kind of been lost. And it's a lot of people know you for a lot of things. I mean, you have one of the biggest podcasts in the world. Your YouTube channel is huge. You're 4-time Emmy Award winning. But a lot of that started with a passion for wrestling and WWF as well, right? What is your first memory, you know, watching, consuming WWF, WWE wrestling of any kind?
Well, look, Ben, it's funny that you say that, like, you watched it back then and you've kind of, you know, fallen out with it. I feel like that happens a lot with wrestling. Like, wrestling's very cyclical. And I feel like, especially with what's going on right now with WWE and AEW and Impact Wrestling as well, a lot of people are kind of coming back around and going, oh, yeah, this is so entertaining. For me, my first memory was seeing it on TV at my grandparents' house. And it's not like my grandpa was a huge wrestling fan or anything. he just always had sports on TV. So growing up in Toronto, it was a lot of hockey, of course. Yes. Sometimes football, a lot of times baseball. But if those weren't on, he would have wrestling on, like the Saturday night main event. And I remember being introduced to, you know, the larger than life characters at the time, like Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Macho Man. I also remember like Coco Beware and the Big Boss Man, Doink the Clown, the Undertaker. I remember my uncle being like, you know what an Undertaker is, right? I'm like, yeah, it's the guy with the hat and the gloves. He's like, no, an Undertaker is like the person that like buries you, you know, at the cemetery. And I was like, oh, wow, it makes sense. This is great. That was my first memory, but my parents did not like wrestling. And I became a mega fan in high school, like the late 90s. The Attitude Era is what they called it at the time, when Stone Cold Steve Austin was, you know, flipping off Vince McMahon, drinking beer all the time. The Rock was, you know, really coming into the character that we knew and loved. That was when I became a huge fan. My parents were not happy about it. And look, I don't blame them. When you go back and watch the wrestling from 96 to like 2001, 2002, there was a lot of stuff going on there that I don't think I would want my adolescent kid to be, you know, consuming drinking, as well. But
womanizing, I would like, lots of cocaine, possibly.
Yeah, like, yeah, like, yeah.
Who knows?
What was really going on there. Val Venus playing a porn star character, like the Godfather had his, he was riding the Ho train. Like there was a lot going on there. And I don't blame my parents, but I would secretly watch it. I would do that thing where like I would be watching the Maple Leafs and then I would hear my dad coming down the stairs. I'd be like, oh, flick it back. Or sorry, I'd be watching wrestling and flick back to the Maple Leafs.
Yes, 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 yes.
And, you know, so that was what kind of got me into it. But I'm one of those people that when I'm into something, I dive all the way in. So I went from watching no wrestling to watching everything, which at that time was Monday Night Raw, Monday Night Nitro, which was WCW, Jacked, Metal, Heat, the pay-per-views, all of it. I was all the way in.
I like that story because most of the male listeners did that at some point, but it wasn't for wrestling. It was for something the unmentionable that we don't have to talk about today. And you wanted to be a wrestler yourself, right?
Yeah, and I was a backyard wrestler like during that time that I was describing. And I also said like, all right, when I have the means and a car, I'm going to go to wrestling school. And for those that those people that don't know, you go to school, you learn how to take the falls, you learn how to run the ropes, you learn how to tell a story in the ring. So I ended up buying a car when I was in college and I'm like, this is it. I'm going to go do the thing. And I started training at a wrestling school in Toronto. And I went for like a few months and I was at this crossroads where this was the summer before I needed to go back to school for, I believe at that time, my junior year. And I was like, I got to make a decision here. Is it school or is it wrestling school? Like what's going to be my main focus here? And I decided, you know what? School is important. I was studying for a communication studies degree, Bachelor of Arts. I'm like, wrestling will always be there. But I want to finish what I'm doing here and I want to put all my effort into this. And I'm grateful with how this worked out. I have one foot very firmly planted in the broadcasting world. I've been so fortunate to spend my career as a TV host and a radio broadcaster and to be able to interview some of the biggest names on the planet. And then every once in a while, I'll dip my toe into the wrestling world as a ring announcer or as a backstage interviewer. And of course, a lot of wrestling interviews on my YouTube channel. So I'm fortunate now that, you know, I kind of get the best of both worlds.
And you said communication and was it performance art?
It was a Bachelor of Arts degree, communication studies. And I somehow fluked my way into a minor in geography just because I had enough of those credits. I don't know if that, you know, does anything for me now, but yeah, a minor in geography.
But the reason I wanted to clarify that is you're talking communication and art, and obviously wrestling is athletic. It's a sport, but it's also an art form. Talk a little bit about the artistry behind what's going on in that ring.
And it's the fact that they have one take to pull this off in front of a live audience while being broadcast live on TV around the world. So yeah, there's so much that goes into it, from the promos that they're cutting, which is them with the microphone talking, to the matches that they have, to, you know, making sure the timing is done right. And at the end of the day, all of this boils down to amazing storytelling. And what wrestling does better than any other type of performance art is it brings you along this journey. It brings you along in this journey of, oh, I really like that guy and he's so close to winning. I know he lost again. Or I really don't like this guy so much. I don't want him to win. Oh, I can't believe he won. And for any wrestling fans that are listening to this, that happened at WrestleMania 39. As we sit here right now, it was this past weekend. That happened where Cody Rhodes was going into this with this great storyline of he needed to finish the story. He was going to win the championship that his late father never won, the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, the WWE Championship. And then there was Roman Reigns on the other side of this who hadn't lost for 3 years. And it was time. We don't like Roman Reigns. It's time for him to finally lose. And everybody thought Cody was going to win. And he got so close. Oh. And then he didn't win. And the fact that it elicits this visceral response out of people, one way or the other. You love it or you hate it. You feel something. And that's what wrestling does so well.
Yeah, that visceral emotion. It's I'm a part of it. And it's very similar. We talk a lot about branding on the show and a personal brand and influencers and thought leaders. And I'll use Alex Hormozi as an example, or I can use Chris Van Vliet as an example. You know, millions and millions and millions of minutes spent consuming content from these people. You get this emotional attachment. This is one thing I love about your show, my show, podcasting in general, is you really can kind of peel back the onion and see like layers and layers and layers into these people's lives. And I remember watching wrestling and being like, just seeing the storyline, like just knowing about the personal. Hulk Hogan's obviously a huge brand. I had a big old life-size Hulk cutout in my room. I guess what I'm trying to ask is personal branding in wrestling. Who do you think currently has the strongest brand, the strongest brand and followers? And why do you think what they do is working so well?
Look, WWE, pro wrestling in general, but WWE especially, is so good at going, as soon as this music hits for this person, you're going to feel a certain way. And I think that that's such an amazing thing. And then it's down to like the colors that they wear, down to the way they walk to the ring. I actually remember studying this, going back to talking about communication studies and a Bachelor of Arts degree. I remember I took a nonverbal communication studies class. And we actually, I wrote a paper about how if you muted the TV on pro wrestling, you'd be able to tell instantly just by the way someone was walking and the way that they were interacting with the crowd, whether they were a good guy or a bad guy. And I think that to answer your question of who does this really well, I mean, the answer could really be everybody. But I think, right, Brock Lesnar is so good, an absolute legend with everything that he's done in WWE and UFC. I think that he's so good. I mean, if you turn on the TV and you've never seen pro wrestling before and you see Brock Lesnar coming out, you know, 6'3", 285 pounds, you go, I would not want to mess with that guy. Wow, he is a large human being. And he just like the way he carries himself. I think that on the female side of things, Charlotte Flair, who's the daughter of the legendary 16-time world champion Ric Flair, she does such a great job of how she carries herself and the branding around that. But honestly, it's really everybody. And I'll give you someone who's done a really great crossover recently, and that's Logan Paul. And I think that a lot of people know Logan Paul for his YouTube channel.
I, by chance, podcast. Have a prime beverage.
Hey,
right,
wow.
Now.
Look at this free advertising for Logan. He's made this amazing transition into pro wrestling, and everything around what he's doing there, it just screams like, I am a pro wrestler, and they've done such a great job with it.
I want to get microscopic with you because I think there's so much to learn about the attention to detail. You mentioned how every one of these guys are doing it so great. You can don't even have to have sound on, and just by their, you know, nonverbals and the lights and how they carry themselves. Where does it all? So what's the beginning? Is someone sitting down with a pen and paper being like, I'm going to pick this song, I'm going to do this? Like, where does it all begin? Because again, each of these wrestlers has their own personal brand. Where do you think it all starts?
I think it all begins with, what kind of feeling do I want people to feel when they see me? I think that that's where it begins. And that I think expands well beyond pro wrestling. I think that when you think of, you named Alex Hormozi, when you think of Alex Hormozi, what do you feel? What do you think of? When you think of Gary Vee, how do you feel? What do you think of? Tony Robbins, same thing. And I think that it comes down to great branding makes people immediately get a picture in their mind of who you are and what you're about when they see you. So if you're, I don't know, you know, how interesting is it when you see a real estate agent on the side of a bus? They all look the same, right? They're wearing a suit, and that's the uniform that you wear when you're a real estate agent. And I think that in pro wrestling, it truly does begin with, all right, how do we want people to feel? And then that goes into, all right, well, what name are we going to give you? What nickname are we going to give you? What kind of entrance theme are you going to get? How are you going to walk to the ring? And this is all telling a story, and you haven't even stepped into the ring yet. And I think that's what's so amazing about wrestling and branding.
It's fascinating. And then you step into the ring. Is it a dance where we have it choreographed every move, or there's got to be a lot of improvisation happening live in the moment? You don't know if they're going to smack you with the elbow half the time, right? How does that work?
Yeah. Usually in a pro wrestling match, you've got like maybe a few of the big spots kind of figured out, and then, you know, how the match is going to end. But almost everything else is being, they call it calling it on the fly or calling it in the ring. It's a lot of like, you'll see a guy in a headlock and he'll be saying, like, telling them the next like two moves in his ear, and then, you know, throws them off the ropes, and then they do those next few moves. Wow. And it's just amazing how they can pull that off.
And it's not a secret that it is a show. It's not, you know, like MMA. I remember when I was younger, wrestling was like Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy. Like, my dad was adamant not to tell me that it was possibly scripted. Is it common knowledge that this stuff's scripted?
Yeah, it's a television show. Like, pro wrestling is a television show. But there's a lot of similarities between pro wrestling and, say, Game of Thrones or Breaking Bad, or insert the name of whatever television program that you enjoy watching. A lot of similarities. There is a script. There are good people and there are bad people. But there's a lot of differences where, like I mentioned before, this is happening live. This is happening in the moment. You've got one take to do this, and that's it. So it just feels like it's so degrading, I think, when someone boils this down to, oh, you know that stuff's fake, or you know it's predetermined, or this is a fake sport. It's like, it's a television program. Like, I would never stand outside of the Avengers Age of Ultron and go, or Endgame or whatever it happens to be, and go, yeah, great movie, but you know the Avengers didn't really save the world, right? You know that Bryan Cranston isn't actually cooking meth, right? Like, you know, that's fake. Like, it's funny how there's this disconnect, you know, and then someone says, oh yeah, but that's like taped. Well, what if I stood outside of Broadway shows? Like, I were to tell you, like, you know, that guy that's singing in The Lion King, he's not actually a lion. Like, it just, when you boil it down like that, it makes people realize how absolutely ridiculous it sounds when you say, like, don't you know that stuff's fake? Like, people are actually getting hurt in pro wrestling all the time. This past weekend, Shane McMahon tore his quad and couldn't finish the match that he was in. Like, this happens all the time. So fake is not the right word to be using here. Scripted? Absolutely. Incredibly entertaining and enjoyable? 1,000%.
1,000%. And it's, you make a good point. They're getting hurt out there. What are the protocols? I know I'm asking you every single wrestling question, but what are the protocols? I mean, there's got to be a little bit of safety, similar to, you know, Tom Cruise flying through the sky. There's safety precautions in place. What kind of things do they do behind the scenes to avoid those incidentals that are going to occur?
Well, look, I can't speak to this, you know, perfectly because I'm not a performer. I'm not a pro wrestler as much as I wanted to be, you know, when I was in college. But I think the biggest thing that this comes down to is trust. You know, you're putting your life and your health into the hands of your opponent. And there's a massive amount of trust that has to happen there. So I think it's just, you know, it's a matter of knowing that you're getting into the ring with a professional and you're trusting them to keep you safe and you're going to do the same for them.
I'm into that. For the listener that's thinking, why did Ben just bring this guy on to suddenly talk about wrestling? I kind of just decided this morning that I wanted to take the conversation here. But the reason to answer that question is you've had some of the most prolific wrestlers of all time on Insight with Chris Van Vliet. So you're the guy that talks to these guys and gets that inside scoop, the behind the scenes story. Well, what are some of the interviews you've hosted with some of these prolific wrestlers? Which ones stand out?
I'll give you a few names that even if you have never watched wrestling, you'll at least be familiar with these people. So I've interviewed The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, John Cena, The Undertaker, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair. I think those will be a handful that I'm sure you've heard of all of those people that I've listed there.
100%. And they say we're the average of the five people we surround ourselves with. So I don't know if we'll get to five, but let's do a few. Let's do two or three out of these interviews. I'll let you choose. Choose someone that inspired you during that conversation and a little bit about what you learned from them on your show.
Yeah. And look, to expand on that famous quote of you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with. I also truly think that you're the sum of the five podcasts you listen to the most, or the five TV shows that you listen to the most, like the five pieces of content that you're consuming, the five albums that you're consuming the most. And that's a really big thing. Like your brain is always listening. And I actually had a moment, I'll answer your question here in a sec, but I had a moment where I used to always habitually listen to morning radio. And I think that morning radio can often have a kind of a negative connotation for, you know, the style of like shock jock style of radio. And I was just listening to it just out of habit. Like I felt like these are my friends. I grew up listening to these people. Like it's just, to have them in my ears as I was working out just kind of felt like a routine. And I realized one day, I'm like, how much more could I learn if I was listening to an audiobook instead, or I was listening to an entrepreneurial podcast instead? And that really changed and shifted everything for me. In terms of the conversations that I've had, The Rock has always been so kind. And you look at what The Rock has done in his career, whether we're talking about pro wrestling or Hollywood or now as an entrepreneur, it's incredible. And everything he does is at the absolute highest level. But I asked him a question. It was, I was asking him or interviewing him for Ballers. And he plays a retired football player in Ballers. And I thought to myself, man, The Rock's goal in his life was to play in the NFL. And he didn't get to live that dream. He went for the CFL. He tried out for the CFL and ended up getting cut. The Calgary Stampeders, and then there's the whole famous story of him having just $7 in his pocket and being evicted from their home. I asked him, I said, if you could go back and change anything to live that dream, to play in the NFL like your character in Ballers, would you change anything? And he told me this great story about like how sometimes the best things in life are the things that don't happen. How like sometimes the best things in life are when life throws you a curveball and you go with it. You know, you thought your life was supposed to head this way, and instead it starts to go off on this other path, but it's leading you to a better destination. So that's one that really stands out to me. And another one is when I interviewed John Cena, he said three words that really changed my life. He said, control the controllable. And so often in life, we get so fixated on things that we have zero control over.
Right.
But what we do have control over is how we want to react to the things that happen to us. We have no control over what other people say or what other people do, but we do have control over how we want to react to that. So those three words have stuck with me ever since that interview, control the controllable.
And both have a similar vein. Incredible advice. I mean, we're going to get curveballs. Things are going to happen that are out of our control. What's an example of a time that you had a curveball? Something came out of control. Maybe my friend David Mano says crash and learn. A time when you crashed, but then you learned. What's a time that's happened to Mr. CVV?
So right after I graduated from college, I begged, borrowed, and stole my way into an internship at a small TV station just outside of Toronto, Peterborough, Ontario. And that internship, long story short, turned into a job. And I was working there where you kind of do everything. You're a one-man band. You're writing, you're shooting, you're editing, you're producing, and you're on TV as well. And that job was great. I learned so many of the fundamentals of what it took to be great on television and all the fundamentals of telling a great story, which still to this day, I use every single day in the podcast I put out and the content I put out on all different forms of social media. That job led me to what at the time was my dream job. I was hosting a show for MTV2 Canada. I picked up my life. I moved it all the way to the west coast of Canada, Vancouver. I got a job there. And I drove 47 hours in my 1995 Robin's Egg Blue Toyota Corolla. And I got there, and this was amazing. Like right from the get, I was interviewing musicians and comedians and actors. This is where I did my first interview with a wrestler, Bobby Lashley, who was the ECW champion at the time. And then here comes the curveball. About a year in, we were owned by one big media company. They got bought out by another big media company, and they merged, and they were looking to cut the budget. And our show, unfortunately, after 15 seasons, I was only there for a year, but after 15 seasons, it got canceled. And it was just, I felt like someone had pulled the rug out from underneath me. I was so not prepared for this. We knew that this media merger was going to happen, but we were thinking like the complete other end of the spectrum. We're like, oh my gosh, we're going to get a new studio. We're going to have bigger guests. This is going to be amazing. And then one day my boss came in and said, everyone stop what you're doing and go home because we don't have a show anymore. And that was what, it was really tough. Because at the time I was 24 years old and I'd picked up my entire life and moved for this job now that doesn't exist. So I had to get back in that 1995 Robin's Egg Blue Toyota Corolla and drive those 47 hours to move back in with my parents and kind of reevaluate and figure out what was important here and what was I going to do. And I was unemployed for 7 months. During that time. And it was really tough because I had it. I was doing the thing that I wanted to do and it had been taken away from me. And it was actually during that time when I ended up getting an agent based in the US. And that really started to shift and change things for me because in Canada, I was getting put up for these jobs and it would be between me and one other person and they would get it. Me and two other people and somebody else would get it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, if I can't get a job in my own country, what am I going to have to do? You know, I'm going to have to move somewhere else. That ended up leading me to living here and doing what I'm doing now.
And the rest is recent history. Aren't you glad you had that curveball? That's a good thing here.
But it's so funny that, you know, hindsight, of course, is 2020. But as it's happening, man, it hurts, right? Yeah. Like I went from having a job to then my job became finding a job. Like I would wake up every day. I would sit down in front of my computer and look for new jobs and send off my demo reel. And it was so painful for it to not work out for so long. And then, like you said, you know, it's a great curveball because eventually something did end up coming from it.
You know, from speaking with you thus far, last episode and today, I don't know if you're wired differently, but you even just mentioned my job became finding a new job. You didn't mention weeping or complaining or pointing your finger at the man. You seem to have this insatiable drive for more, for better, for growth. Did you cry when that happened? Was there a dark moment? Or you're just like, I'm strong, I'm stiff, I'm going forward. What was it like? Because it seems like you're wired differently, I guess is what I'm saying.
I remember having a moment where I was like, I want to blame somebody. Like I wanted to like point a finger and get mad at somebody Then I realized there really wasn't anybody to point a finger at. And then I also realized, what good was that going to do anybody? So for me, it was just like, all you can do is move forward. You know, I couldn't live in the past. I couldn't keep talking about this job that I didn't have anymore. All I could do was move forward and try to move on to what's next. And yeah, I'd be lying, Ben, if I told you it wasn't difficult.
Yeah.
But it was like, all I can do is, you know, look at the situation that I have in front of me right now and do the best with what I have. So I don't know if it's about being wired differently, but it was just about like, all right, that was the best that I had. Well, how can I make that better? How can I move on from here? How can I take what I've learned in this past year working for this TV show and turn that into something better right now?
Something bigger and better. And whether or not you're wired differently or not, like, that's just a fun thing to say. I think that is a big part of how you've been able to achieve this level of greatness, was the fact that, you know, you'd have a failure, you'd step on it and move forward. So there's a lot for me and everyone to learn about how you had curveballs. It's not like it was all sunshine and rainbows, but you had the resiliency to keep on pushing forward, it seems like.
I think you have to. I mean, you absolutely have to. Like, you can't just rest on your laurels of like, this is the thing I used to do. It's really about like, what have you done lately? And what are you going to be doing lately? And I don't know. I've always just been hungry for more. Like, that's always been a constant thing in my life, no matter what it is that I'm doing, is just more. And I want to be able to push forward and do the most that I can.
I love this. Weaving back wrestling, who stands out as those? Because the cream is always going to rise to the... There's Kobe Bryant's, Michael Jordan's,
LeBron James. Wow, that's a wrestling phrase right there.
Yeah, cream rises the crop.
That's Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah, cream rises the crop.
The cream, yeah, rises to
yeah,
the
brother.
Top.
So there's everybody. I'm using the NBA as an example. Everybody, even the ones you don't see playing, are incredibly great. They're
of course.
They're world class. Mm-hmm. But there can only be one LeBron James, one Kobe Bryant. Right now, Jokic is just impressing the heck out of me. Who stands out for you in the wrestling world today as the people that truly are rising to the top? And what are they doing differently than someone who might be right behind them?
I'll give you two. And these are deep cuts if you're not a pro wrestling fan. In WWE, Sami Zayn has been doing some really special work. And he's part of this storyline right now. It was part of a storyline with the Bloodline, which is Roman Reigns, who's the top star in WWE. But he really found his own voice through this. And the crowd really got behind him as an underdog. And it was amazing that anytime he had a microphone in his hand, all you wanted to do was listen because you knew that it was going to be gold. So that's definitely one person in WWE who has been doing this for a very long time, but I think it's really finding their stride. And then in AEW, there's a guy, MJF, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, who is just doing things on a completely different level. And he's one of those people that, you know, we know wrestling is scripted, like we talked about. But he does these things that blur the lines all the time. And you're like, is that MJF the wrestler doing that? Or is that MJF the person? He's just not a nice guy. And what he's doing hasn't been done in a really long time in pro wrestling. And it's exciting to see all of the time and the work and the effort that he's putting in paying off for him now. And he's the AEW champion of their company.
I like the deep cuts. And anyone listening who's like, I don't know these people yet, they are in the show notes. But in addition, I wanted to have this kind of microscopic look conversation with you, because these aren't ordinary people that are on, you know, they're out in the limelight. But looking at what they do to be successful is always really fascinating to me, because people think, you mentioned it, oh, it's fake and they're just running around doing cocaine, hitting each other in the face. No, this is a performance science. The athleticism is incredible. It blows my mind. And I just wanted to come in as kind of a beginner idiot to learn a little bit more about how truly fascinating it really all is. Do you have any predictions as to what's to come in the next, you know, 2, 3, 5 years in the art?
Well, look, the big news right now coming out of this past weekend is that WWE got sold to Endeavor, which is the company that also owns the UFC. So there's going to be a lot of really big things coming out of this. When Endeavor bought UFC a few years ago, I mean, their stock has gone up huge since then. The company's worth, UFC is worth so much more than it was when they bought it. I think they bought it for something around $4 billion. Now UFC is valued at like $12 billion. So that's going to be the biggest thing to come out of this, whether you are a wrestling fan or not. I'm sure you'll be seeing the residual effects of that just in, you know, modern day pop culture. But I think that that's actually a really big thing about pro wrestling. Whether you're a wrestling fan or not, you know that there's a guy named Ric Flair who says, woo! And I think that that's what's really cool. Whether you're a wrestling fan or not, you know there's a guy named Hulk Hogan who flexes it up and says, brother. And I think that that's amazing. And I love, like, when you see this in the NFL, like, someone will work it into, like, their pregame ritual. Like, give me 2 claps and a Ric Flair. Woo! And I think that that's so cool that whether you love wrestling or not, you're aware of it. And it's, like, in the zeitgeist.
I can smell what Chris Van Vliet's cooking today. Let's go. Oh, dude. I did not expect to do a wrestling podcast today. This is tremendous.
Me neither. I was expecting us to talk about, like, content creation and business.
Tell me about this. Content creation. Well, here's the thing. That is something that you have mastered. I mean, you grew your Reels channel so quickly. Obviously, your Instagram's blowing up. What have you learned? And we talked about this a little. You had explained in the first episode how at first you're like, I just had this great interview. I'm like pulling the car over to charge the laptop just to get it uploaded. Nowadays, all of us have a supercomputer right next to us. How have times changed for you? Because you've really grown your reach very quickly as of lately. And you haven't won an Emmy as of the past couple of years, but you still continue to grow in popularity. What are you doing different that's working so well?
I just think I capitalized on the vertical video early. And look, a lot of people are making much better Reels, Shorts, TikToks than I am. But when this became a thing 2+ years ago, I just jumped on it. And I saw a bit of a white space there that nobody else was really capitalizing on. I think I reposted some video in the vertical format and it got like 330,000 views on Instagram Reels. And I'm like, that's not even like, wasn't even great content. It was just like, but Instagram was pushing this out. Like it was very obvious that they were doing something here where they wanted this to be their main medium. So I was like, well, I'm going to lean into that. And I remember back then, 2+ years ago, one of my friends was doing this challenge. It doesn't sound very challenging anymore, but it was a challenge to do one reel a day for 30 days. And I was like, how could I possibly come up with 30 reels? I can't even think about that. And eventually just started taking my older interviews and just taking the most shareable moments, the funniest moments, the most memorable moments, and just chopping them up into these 60-second or less Shorts, Reels, TikToks. And I think it was just a volume game at that point. It turned out it went from like 30 a month to like 40 a month to 50 a month to now I think I'm putting out close to 70 or 75 pieces of vertical video a month. And I really just think that's it. And I think that the biggest thing here for anybody who's looking to jump into the space is try to make content that's shareable. Try to make content that is valuable in either that it's educational or that it's entertaining. And I think that the fact that it can be shareable, that you'd want to share it with your friend, your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your mom, your dad, whoever it happens to be. I think that that's the most important element is find something that is shareable. So for me, it's a lot of times trying to get just, you know, an interesting story out of an actor or out of an athlete or out of a wrestler that maybe they're telling a story about one of their most famous moments or perhaps most infamous moments. And they're giving their take on it that we haven't heard before. Mm. I did one recently. I interviewed Gerard Butler for his new movie, Plane. You know, very entertaining movie, by the way. Such a good movie. If you have any time this weekend or this week, check out Plane. It was perfect for exactly the kind of movie that it was. But I was like, man, it's Gerard Butler. What's the first thing you think of when you think of Gerard Butler? You think of 300. You think of that iconic line, "This is Sparta." So I asked him about that. He told me this amazing story about how that wasn't how it was written in the script. In the script, it was supposed to be like him saying, like, really subtly, like, "This is Sparta." And they did the line a few times that way, and they were packing up the cameras to move on to the next shot. And he goes, "Ah, hold on a second." And he says to Zack Snyder, the director, I think I got another take in me. I set all the cameras back up. And he's like, "I'm just going to give the biggest, most over-the-top take I could possibly give." And he yells it the way that we see it in the movie. And Zack Snyder goes, "That was crazy, but that was awesome." And it ended up being in the movie. So like finding those little moments, I think have really helped me out.
So powerful. Other than hiring someone, which is super helpful, how do you find those moments? Is what should we be looking for? Let's say we've got a long form video. There's peaks, there's valleys. Some things clearly we're going to cut out. What should we look for? What do we know is going to pop?
Well, it starts before the long form interview, right? It starts with the research that you're putting into this. Mm-hmm. And a really big tactic that I use is I type their name into Google and I'll also type their name into YouTube and I'll see what the suggested search terms are. Like if you were to type in Ben Albert and then you see like the other things that people are typing in, you go,
I would say, "Oh, Ben Albert, Duke Blue Devils, football defensive coordinator." Yeah. The defensive coordinator, I believe, for the linebacker, linebacker coach for the Duke Blue Devils football team, Ben Albert. I'm working my way up ahead of him though. So
it's always just interesting though to see like, I know this person for whatever it is that's in my mind, but what do other people think about? Or if they're, you know, if they have a new movie coming out or a new book coming out or a new comedy tour that they're about to go on, what kind of news articles are popping up about this person? Is there something that maybe they haven't addressed recently that we can address it during this conversation? So that's always been a big one for me is like, if I'm going to interview this massive name, what are one or two or three topics that people are for sure going to want to hear about? And I think that we've talked about it quite a bit during this conversation. It's always great to hear about somebody's full story. And I, you know, hearing someone struggle, I think humanizes that person and also makes someone who's on that journey themselves right now go, "Oh, if that person who has accomplished so much struggled at the point in their life where I am right now, man, I can get through this too. And I can accomplish great things.
I can do it too. We all can achieve greatness. Am I wrong, Chris?"
Absolutely not. Yeah, you're completely right. It's all in us. It's just a lot of people will come up against some sort of a hurdle or some sort of a roadblock and they'll go, "Well, that's it. I tried. It's over now." Instead of pushing through that or finding a way around it. Like, look at somebody who's done the thing that you want to do. Take a little bit from them. Take a little bit from somebody else who's done it and put that all together and make that your story.
I say this all the time. There's no key to success. It's a combination lock. And that's exactly what you described, because each and every one of us has our own unique combination, just how we all have our unique.
Right now.
No key to success. It's a combination lock. Why do you think they take our fingerprint when we get in trouble? Because each and every one of us has our own unique fingerprint. So if you can extract the wisdom from all these legends that aren't any better than us, they're just farther along than us. We can extract the wisdom, we can unlock our own combination and be successful. But it's me being successful is not going to look like Chris Van Vliet, just how the listeners being successful is not going to look like anyone they look up to or mentored by. So no key to success. It's a combination lock. And I think you're one of those combinations in my life. You're helping me unlock something new, Chris.
I just think consistency is such an important tool here. I whatever it is that you're chasing after, whether that is a podcast or a YouTube channel or writing a book, being a speaker, a business that you're starting, consistency is the key. And I think that it's too often we'll see somebody who is having great success and we forget about all the steps they took to get there. So I love that combination lock thing.
Do we have, we got to do a rapid fire round. We're at time here.
So let's go. Rapid fire.
Do you want to do a rapid fire round WWE edition?
Sure.
biggest fight in history.
Rock Hogan, WrestleMania 18. I was there in Toronto.
Greatest tag team of all time.
Of all time? I'm going to go with my personal choice here being the Hardy Boys. I was such huge fans of Matt and Jeff and the work they did, but there's been so many great tag teams in history. But for me, they were the ones I grew up on.
For you, greatest ring performer.
Of all time?
Of all time.
And I love that you have these rapid fires ready to go.
This is the only questions I read down today, Chris.
I'm going to go with Hulk Hogan. Because if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan and everything that he did during the WWF's golden era, I don't think that we would have had the performers that we had in the 90s, like Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock, which then turned into the performers we had in the 2000s, like John Cena, which then led into the performers we had in the 2010s, and now being like Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. So I think that if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan breaking through into the mainstream, we would not be talking about wrestling on this podcast right now.
It's where I got my start. We'll do one more. Your favorite rivalry of all time.
There's so many. There's so many. Oh man, I don't know where to go here with this. I'll go with, again, that Attitude Era, the late 90s into the early 2000s, Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock. And they had two of the best WrestleMania matches, in my opinion, with just amazing storytelling. So two of the biggest names in WWE history and pro wrestling history, two of the biggest faces of the company at that time going head to head. You can't beat it.
We'll do a bonus question. So Chris Van Vliet is going to fight Logan Paul. What song are you coming out to? And I've noticed you've been bulking up, so you might get to the point where you could kick his ass. What song are you coming out to? And what are you wearing? Like, what's your outfit? What's your jam?
Song. Every once in a while, I'll do something at a local wrestling show, and I'm like, what song like hits and like gets the audience like right into it? And I usually end up picking Bulls on Parade by Rage Against the Machine. So that's probably the song, I guess. When I was a backyard wrestler, I had a different Rage Against the Machine song. There's something about that. It's just, I don't know. It feels like pro wrestling personified, their music. What am I coming out to? I do not know what kind of clothes I'm coming out with.
You're coming out with the strongest body of your life, right? You're bulking up. You could just come
that's
out
right.
Looking strong.
Yeah, I'm very tanned, I'm sure. Like more tan than I've ever been in my whole life. My color scheme seems to be blue with some black and white in there. So I'm sure maybe it's blue trunks with, you know, the Chris Van Vliet logo here on them. I don't know.
I think
if it's WrestleMania, give me some pyro. Give me some fireworks. It needs to be an over-the-top entrance. So, I don't know. I keep going back to WrestleMania 39 because it just happened here in Los Angeles. But Logan Paul entered the arena, came into his match on a zip line. He was like flying down into SoFi Stadium on a zip line with a live microphone as he was announcing himself coming down. I don't know how you can top that. But I would think if it's me versus Logan Paul, I'm going to have to get the win here.
Well, listen, we got to get a photo because we've got a new cover art for Insight with Chris Van Vliet.
Yeah.
The blue, the tan. What? Tell us, how do we keep in touch with you? We can listen to your show, I imagine, YouTube, Instagram. I mean, you tell us.
Well, wherever you're listening to this, you can find my podcast, Insight with Chris Van Vliet, which, of course, does have interviews with pro wrestlers. It also has interviews with a lot of actors, comedians, entrepreneurs, athletes, all kinds of different people. I want to talk to people who are the absolute top of their game in whatever field that they're in. And then on social media, it's just my name, at Chris Van Vliet. I like to think of the reels, TikToks, vertical video, whatever you want to call them, as the breadcrumbs that then lead to the longer clips on my clips channel on YouTube that then hopefully lead to the whole loaf of bread, which is the full interview on my main Chris Van Vliet channel.
I love it. I mean, if you're in a rush and just want a little nibble, these reels are incredible. Yeah. And then I'll attest the podcast is incredible. So whether it's short form to long form, I know my audience is going to gain a lot of value. So, hey, I'm endorsing you right now. Go check out Chris. You could even unsubscribe and subscribe to him because he's cooler than me. But
no, don't do that. Subscribe to both of us. They're free.
They're free. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. Always fun.
Brent, Ben, always great to see you. Thank you so much. And congrats to you. And I wish you so much more continued success with everything that you're doing.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.
Hey, it's Chris Van Vliet, host of Insight with Chris Van Vliet. And you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. And man, check out my guy, Ben Albert. He always asks amazing questions on Real Business Connection. So go check out his podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And Ben, my friend, keep up the great work.